Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily, presented by Mokarem Injury Lawyers.
That's right. Dirty's Daily is powered by Mokarem Injury Lawyers. Hard as hell to say, easy to dial. 281-222-2222. That's 281-222-2222. Clint is out today, and I see here the first thing on the text line says, I missed Clint's 4 o'clock yesterday. What happened to the car? I talked to a lot of people. My man Tony, who's going to be looking at my floors. My man Tony came out. He said, man, I had to make sure that was up on YouTube and Twitch in the background so I could hear that story at 4 o'clock. Somebody said, you missed what happened. Listen, that was a 23-minute story that bled over to the next segment. I would urge you to check out on the Odyssey app, on the podcast page, the 4 o'clock hour. There was so many twists and damn turns in that story. I don't have enough to tell you. We were in the sticks. Yeah. There were 5 stray dogs on a dirt road. There was a suicide death that had happened weeks before that prevented him to get his car situated. Tow trucks, rain. There was a lot.
There
going
was
on.
Clint discovering the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, there was a Renaissance Festival component to it. Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's man. A lot. There's a lot. Whole lot. Adventures with Clint Sterner in the electric vehicle.
Yeah. As he has vowed that he is done with that vehicle. I think his wife said, leave the damn thing on the side of the road. She's done.
Is he not, because this is the only thing that none of this surprised me except just the whole initial part of him being in the electric vehicle to begin with. Like, I understand he's told the story about how his wife wanted one. That's why he got one to begin with. But we all three of us know Clint fairly well. Is there a more, like, a less likely EV driver in your life that you can think of than Clint Sterner?
Not under 50.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, this is so, him even being in that vehicle seems off-brand to where this is not surprising at all.
Yeah, boy.
Maybe the carelessness part, but
he wasn't planning them trips.
Yeah.
Wasn't planning them at all.
This ain't it.
I just say to myself, hey, bro, now you left that house knowing, like, hey, I'm limited from the jump on when it comes to, you know, miles to empty, and I ain't got much charge on my phone. My man left with both of those scenarios. One's the key and what? And he went to a place, an area that he had no idea about.
Hey, Clint got the carelessness of an Astros medical staff employee.
Yeah,
he could work for the Astros.
Yep, medical staff. Yep. And I think he might be in a better shot than that. But speaking of that, the Jake Myers situation is interesting. I heard Luke Merrill earlier today on In the Loop say they played, they embarrassed themselves yesterday, and then they played the game. And that is fitting to me. If you missed it, Jake Myers, who got injured in the Dodgers series, came out mid-game. They said him missed at least the first 2 games of this series against the Guardians. And then when we were leaving last night, it had been known that I don't even know if there was a report on how he was feeling, but he was just in the lineup.
Yeah.
Just in the 2 spot in center field. All right.
Yeah. I saw the tweet. Tyler had put it on our social media.
Yep.
Sports Radio 16. Hey, look, Jake Myers is back in the lineup. LFG. And I was like, well, let's go then. T-Mill, let's go, dog. Little did we know, though.
Yeah. But they put it out, and he went through, as he said, like a 25-minute type of, you know, potential workout where he did some things. But ultimately, as the team came running out of the dugout, Brandon Walters running to the mound, everybody's running out of the dugout. He goes down in a heap. He goes down in a heap and doesn't make it to center field. I don't know if he made it out of the infield. But he doesn't make
look,
it.
It did not look like it.
He doesn't make it to center field. He goes down, and it is guess what? The calf as the culprit, and they don't even walk him. They probably, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm starting to get even more angry. They probably should have grabbed a cart to come get him, right? Instead of having him walking, leaning against somebody.
I hadn't even thought of that, dude, but absolutely.
They did it for Jake Odorizzi a couple of years ago.
They got him a cart.
Oh, my God.
Remember that? They did it for Jake.
They gave it.
Why not this Jake?
They gave it to Crugier Hill. Remember, he went off on a cart, got hands laid on him by Jack.
It sucks to suck.
For a knee bruise. Like, why did they not even have a cart?
That's a great point.
He walked. I mean, that was a long distance he walked. Because clearly they didn't want him go to down the dugout, down steps.
It sucks to suck.
Well, anyhow. You know the reason why. They didn't think he needed it.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the same reason why they ain't get an MRI. MRI in the first place.
Yeah,
they ain't think he needed it.
So Jake went down, and I still don't think we have any understanding if he's been put on the IL yet. Hell, he might be in the lineup tomorrow is all we know. But it would assume the way he looked, it didn't look good the way he was gingerly walking off through the gate back there in the outfield as they took him back. We haven't really had any word. He did speak to the media for some reason last night. But I want you and the people to tell me if you think I am being over the top with this, because this is my thinking at this point. I think this whole injury situation, which is the training staff, when it comes to if somebody else has a problem or an issue, them determining things, how long it takes for guys to get back. By the way, Zach DiCenzo, these nuts, still isn't swinging a bat. How long it takes guys to get back? 26 months since the last time we saw Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
Multiple setbacks. I truly think this could derail them from winning a championship. I think we've reached the stage where this is not just a big deal of like individual guys. I think this is going to potentially be the thing that stops them from winning a championship, because this is now we don't know when Jake's going to come back. Who knows when Jordan's going to come back? Who knows what's going to happen with the Christian Javier's and the Luis Garcia's and the JP Francis who are trying to get back? Who knows what's going to happen to Spencer Arrighetti? Who knows with all of this that's going to happen? I honestly think this is injury gate, all of the stuff that goes around it, getting hurt, getting them up, because I don't think any of this is a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence, Brandon and Tyler, that the team that seems to struggle getting people back and struggle to figure out diagnosis on players also has a team that seems for the last 2 years that's had a damn scroll of players every single week that are injured. I don't think that's a coincidence either. So maybe I'm being too harsh, or maybe I'm going over the top, or Ron, you're reaching on this one. You could tell me if I am. But I do feel like this is the thing that could derail them.
Now, to me, it's the difference between thought process of where they were when they handled business against the Dodgers and where they are now. And I think the fact that they lost this series, the fact that they got swept in this series, is more of a coincidence in terms of how you feel about it. But it is right there, like on the heels of them losing, or right before they get swept on that same night. This is the stuff, type of stuff that we're talking about. But in the Dodgers series, I'm thinking, man, look around here and see all of this stuff that they're overcoming. Everything that's happened, everything that you just laid out, from the pitching staff to not having one of the better hitters in baseball, certainly the best hitter on your team, the guy that you probably expected to lead your team in OPS, hasn't played since early May, has only played a small fraction amount of the games for you, and here you are sweeping one of the better constructed baseball teams that we've ever seen, and certainly the most expensive.
Sweeping the Phillies.
Like
two or three from the Cubs.
And so showing a pattern of really good baseball, going back to early June, the hottest team in baseball. Look at everything that you're overcoming and what you're showing the baseball world in terms of what you're capable of. And then to this, it's like, oh, yeah, but part of what you're overcoming, I forgot to mention this, part of what you're overcoming, it appears, is yourself. right? Like you, like you're not just overcoming bad luck and bad circumstance.
Yeah, you're adding to some of the reasons that you're having to overcome.
Exactly. There is some bad luck thrown in the mix here, but you are part of the problem. And the longer this lingers more it happens, the more part of the problem it appears that you are. So, yeah, no, I don't think that that's crazy to say. I think that's the logical feeling based off of what's happened. Like before, it's, hey, look how they're overcoming everything. And now it's, oh, man, they've overcome all of these things. Are they going to be able to overcome themselves? Is this the thing that's going to sink them? And I think it's a fair question. Could they mismanage their way health-wise, mismanage their way to, you know, out of a championship?
Because, as Brenton in the Heights says, in the Astros' defense, they have a day off today, and the All-Star break is coming up, so they definitely needed to rush Jake back. I sense the sarcasm.
Yeah, right.
With a 7-game lead as well in the division. Now, but if you look at it right, it feels like to me, Yordan Alvarez, if he does come back, and when he does come back, it seems like he's going to miss more time than he needed to miss.
It seems like he's already missed more time than
right.
He needed
like
to miss.
Whenever this does happen, it seems like there's a fair thought by Astros fans or anybody with brains that if he played for, let's just pick a team, the Toronto Blue Jays, that he'd be back, or he would have been back faster than he would. As he is here, it seems like Jake Myers is probably going to be out longer than he should have been.
Well, think about it like this.
And who knows what is. Luis Garcia has not pitched in 26 months.
They put Yordan Alvarez on the 60-day injured list after he had already missed basically 60 games. Days. So, I mean, that if they were anticipating or projecting that he was going to miss that many games, they might have put him on the 60-day to begin with, or the 30-day, or whatever it is. So, yeah, no, it's very obvious and clear that they were not anticipating this, that he's already missed more games than they thought. And, of course, we can go back to, oh, yep, there's a fracture there, but guess what? It's 60% healed, which is say it's been broken. We ain't know it.
Yep, and he's still not swinging a bat. And they're going to be the ones. Like, that's the scary thing.
Oh, and then we sent him to Florida to get it right, and then, oh, you know what? Yeah. That turns out he's still.
Well, that's the scary thing.
He's hurting there, too.
That they, and that's the other part, is they are going to be the ones who determine when Jeremy Peña is ready to start swinging again.
Oh, God.
When Yordan Alvarez is ready for a third time to start swinging again. They're going to determine again when Jake is ready to run again. Unless Jim Crane does something different. Whew. All right, that's the latest thing. I honestly think this is becoming this may stop you from winning a championship. And you all know how hard that is.
Well, and the thing that worries me about the whole, because I'm not against what you're saying, advocating for change. Somebody got to get fired. Somebody's got to get reassigned at the very least. Like, we got to switch it up. But also, when it's July 10th in the middle of a baseball season, you figure that all of the medical expertise that is in baseball at this point is either occupied or doing something. Where do you go find your solution at this point? Like, and I'm not saying it's impossible.
It's gotta be some really old guy.
I don't feel great about it. Like, I would hope that your plan was better going into it. I don't like your chances of finding that guy on July 10th.
I give Dr. James Andrews everything I got to see.
Might have to. Clearly.
Yeah. All right, tonight. And I wonder how much you're going to be in this. I wonder how much Tyler's going to be into this, and you all as well. And Tyler's at a different end of the spectrum than we are. Tonight, Cooper Flay versus Bronny James. Summer League tickets are selling for a historic amount. Lower Bowl tickets are going for $650, while courtside tickets for $2,500. Cooper versus Bronny tonight, ESPN. Listen, I want to tell you this. I love Bronny like a godson. But this ain't about Bronny James. You think it is? How much you think this is about Bronny James?
Oh, the basketball part, absolutely zero.
But you think, I'm talking about, you think the money part of you think there is, because I'll be honest, I watched his first game. I'm not saying there wasn't nobody there, but I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I feel like this is more Cooper Flag brought in.
Yeah.
A lot more Cooper. Like, the interest is is in him that they feel like they could charge this kind of money.
So
that'll be packed.
A term that I think is overly used or sometimes just improperly used, but often used, is clickbait. And this is like, as a professional headline writer, and I can at least say I'm that, as someone who writes headlines for a living, I can tell you without a shout of a doubt, okay, that this was all about just getting the popular names in the headline. The story and the basketball intrigue is simply in Cooper Flagg. But Bronny James is, whether he's good or not, whether he's a superstar or whether he's the last guy on the bench, he's famous. So you work his name into the headline one way or another.
But do you think that the prices and the ticket charging of the ticket would change if Bronny was in the game or not?
I think you can charge for famous people, yes.
So I think
it's got less to do with the quality of basketball player.
You think he's getting a piece of why they're charging so much?
I think he could be a reason why they charge so much, yes. Now, I think it's mostly Cooper Flagg.
I was going to say,
he's Bronny James. Like, even if it's just to go watch LeBron James' son not be good at basketball, that's more expensive than saying watch any other person that's a second-round pick not be good at basketball.
The only reason why I feel like this is more Cooper is because they had, like, this isn't the first game that the Lakers have played this year in the summer league, and they didn't just come out in droves in that one. So that's my thing. But for me, I do think it's mostly Cooper, and my thought is, wow, okay, this is a summer league game that is being treated like a big kind of a deal,
yeah,
with him in it, and there is clearly interest in it, and I wonder how many people, is this something that, all right, I'm at least kind of looking on my calendar to check out.
Yeah.
It is for me. I'm guessing it is for you.
Yeah,
I don't know if it is
Cooper
for
Flag,
Tyler.
Yeah, everything Cooper Flagg does, basically.
I don't know if this one is for Tyler.
I will not be tuned in.
But I think a lot of people will, and a lot of people are charged. They're charging for this, which is a good sign for the NBA of,
yeah,
hey, Cooper Flagg is somebody that people care about.
Yeah.
And are willing to, and I think maybe even a little bit more than I even realized that he would, like, his first game would be like this.
Yeah, I think that, and that it helps to me that you've got, like, on the other side of it, you've at least got a name in Bronny James, even if, hey, we don't want to see Bronny checking them. We don't really care to see Bronny play at all. But you can just not just say, hey, it's Cooper Flagg's debut, but it's Cooper Flagg and, hey, on the other end is Bronny James. Like, I think that part of it helps. But Cooper Flagg, just in and of himself, I think is one of the more intriguing number one picks that you'll get. Obviously, we just had Wimby a couple of years ago. But Cooper Flagg's going to be one of those guys, right?
I wondered how captivating he would be to people. And this is a good start. ESPN is treating it like, obviously, it's on their airways, but they're treating it like a big deal. When, I mean, obviously, it's kind of the season where there's not a whole bunch going on, but they are treating this like a really big
deal. He's got the game, and he's got the other things going for him that make it make sense.
Oh, I got it. All right, Amen Thompson. B-Scott is wondering, what should the expectations be for Amen Thompson? I think a lot of people feel like that is the jump player for the Houston Rockets. What is and what should be the expectations for Amen Thompson? You can send your thoughts in. We'll do that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
What should be the expectation for Amen Thompson? Right? If you had to make, I guess, the bet, if you were going to be like Tyler and go on a preseason bet on which Rocket young player will take the biggest leap, the biggest jump from where they were the last time we saw him to next year, I think Amen Thompson would probably be the top of the list. Maybe Jabari Smith, some people are there. Maybe Reed Shepard, some people believe. But Amen Thompson, who I thought took a hell of a step from year one to year two. I mean, he's already first team all defense last year, which was a big deal, finishing the top five in the MVP defensive player of the year race, which is big time already. He can do so many things defensively with his size. and his athleticism.
And honestly, the guy who won it is the only one who I would have voted over him. Like, Evan Mobley won it, right?
Draymond was real. He was really trying to reach.
I know the guy from Atlanta was really good as well. Yeah, but Dyson. But only the guy that won it, I thought, was better than Amon Thompson last year defensively.
So I guess the thought is, and you can text in 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Go ahead and get involved. What should be the expectation? I was going to say what should be the proper fare, but no, what should be the expectation for him? Real quick, last year during the regular season, he averaged just over 14 points a game, just under 4 assists a game, just over 8 rebounds a game on 55% shooting, 27% shooting from 3, and just about a steal and a half a game and 1.3 blocks a game, and as I said, was first team all defense. The postseason points jumped up a little bit, 15-7, almost 16 a game, and really came on later in that series against the Warriors. Just over 3 assists, 7 rebounds, 49% shooting. So a little bit down on the shooting numbers from the postseason, from the regular season. But that's just an understanding of what he was last year. What are the expectations?
So at the minimum, he's got to be an all-NBA defensive guy again. Like, he started that now. He set that early expectation. And I think that it would be disappointing if he's not, at the very least, on that level. And I got a hard time imagining, you know, he's not a revelation anymore. Everybody knows what he is. I got a hard time imagining that if he plays at that level that he wouldn't get that accolade. So I feel like that's bare minimum, like being in that defensive player of the year conversation as he was this year. Being a first team all defensive player like he was this year, I think is the bare minimum. But I'm looking at like the numbers, right? And it took the injury to Jabari Smith Jr. to get him into the starting lineup. And then once he got there, he never left it. But you're talking about somebody that averaged 10 shots a game, so 14 points on roughly 10 shots a game. You gotta figure that he's gonna get more minutes and more shots. So I'm wondering how much.
Do you also figure he's going to be more personally aggressive?
Yeah, comfortable. No, yeah, I think 100%. Like it's hard to imagine, especially given the everything you just talked about, the progression that he made from year one to year two. Like he has ascended, he's arrived.
You think
right?
he gets more shots with KD?
Even with KD,
and Shinguna.
Yeah, I think he gets more. I think he's going to get more shots no matter who joined this basketball team, and I think that's an important thing for them and for him. So, but how many more is the question, right? Like, it might not go from, let's say, 10 to 15, but does it go from like 10 to 12? Is it 10 to 13? So that's what I'm trying to figure out. How many more shots does he get? I'm thinking like, you know, go from 14 a game to 18 a game, 16 a game, somewhere around there. Can you make that jump? Can you make a, you know, anywhere from a 2 to 4 point jump in your scoring average? And then just beyond numbers, like just a more comfortable bag, if you will, a more comfortable offensive portfolio, things that he can go to get to his own spot and or get to the spots that he wants to get to and get his own shot. Like, I think that I think his ball handling needs to improve, but it's good enough and he's athletic enough and good enough to be able to shoot from wherever he wants to shoot from. It's just about getting that shot down, right, and working on that shot. So to me, that's where it's got to show up. It's got to show up in some sort of evolution in his offensive game to where he's just not giving you 14 points based on just pure athleticism and ability, but he's also able to, again, pick his spots, be a little bit more measured and controlled, and I think also really benefit from having a Kevin Durant on the team, right? Like having somebody like that on the team and more of a, I think, cohesive offense should be able to help him. So that is my expectation, that he's at the very least what he was last year, but scoring anywhere from 2 to 4 points more a game with the additional minutes and shots.
What should be the expectation for Amon Thompson? Text line coming through. The expectation for Mr. Thompson should be developing a better jump shot. He does that. It's game over for the league. Also kicking Cooper's ass. As is an expectation.
Cooper Flagg. Yeah.
They will run into Dallas.
Yep, that'd be fun.
I would say I have to personally separate my hope and my expectation.
Yeah.
My hope is that he is that he ascends to becoming the second best player on this team. That he is he is the second most. Let me put it this way, because I think it's the same, but some people that he's the second most impactful player on this team. That would be the hope, because many times you say second best player, many people move to the offensive game.
Right.
Like, I think there was an argument for all those years with Golden State that Draymond was the second most impactful player on their team.
I honestly, not to get us off track, I honestly think you can make the argument that he already is that. But that is, again, going away from people's tendency to go straight to offense. But I think you can make that case that being an all defensive guy is more valuable than just being another all-star.
An all-star? Yeah.
But
19,
but I'm not,
double
not
the, figure.
Yeah, rebounds, not to take away from it, I'm just saying.
He led the team in rebounds and assists and was second in scoring, Şengün.
Yeah, no, I know he led the team, but is he better at what he does than what the other guy is? And I think the other guy is better.
I would say right now your 1-2 is probably
Durant and Şengün.
Yeah. And my hope is that he jumps to that. My expectation is that the offense game improves. Now, I don't know. I like what you said to me. 18 to 20 feels like the right space, because I do think he should be more confident to get into his spots. And that's not even with improving his shot, which nothing about him seems like he is not somebody who is going to work at his craft. And I think he is going to work on that jump shot. Hell, it got better from year one to year two. So, to me, it is to improve that offensive game and to be even more of a threat, defensively, and to be able to guard more defensively. But to me, it's like 18. Like, he was damn near, 14 and 8? 18 and 10, I think, is attainable, probably. Yeah,
if he gets a jump shot, cancel Christmas. Like, it's a wrap. That's the reason why I'm like, okay, could he be, like, if he gets a jump shot, he's Kawhi Leonard. You know what I mean? Like, can he be that? That's what... I don't want to put that on him as that, because you said separate expectation from hope.
Yeah,
And so I'm not there yet, but I do think that just with more shots, more than 10 shots a game, that he'll do better than the 14. So I'll start there, and we can go from there.
Yeah. All right. Amen Thompson, it could be a big-time year for him, and he could be the next one getting paid. We're seeing guys like Chet Holmgren and these guys get them rookie. He could be the next one that's ready to get paid. All right. We talked about this a little bit, the big story here with the Astros. Wait till you hear what Joe Espada had to say in regards to the injury to Jacob. I'm calling him Jacob. Wait till you hear what he had to say in regards to the injury. It, to me, may be an all-time low in terms of communication to the media from the Astros. That's next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Had myself up all night last night.
What happened, man?
Oh, man, just got myself for watching TV. I slipped into a movie.
That's what normally happens to me.
I didn't intend to it. About 107, I had to make myself, and it's crazy. I stopped with 24 minutes left in the movie. Because I knew I had to get up early. I had a little...
What time was it?
It was 1:07.
Okay.
I knew I had to get up early. I had to do a hit on Fox with my man Nate Griffin. So I had to do that at 7:20. So I knew I had to be up, but I stopped myself. About 24 minutes left in that movie. And it's bad. It's a movie I've seen.
Yeah, what movie?
In Too Deep.
Which one's that?
That's the Tyrese and...
No, that's Omar Epps. That's Omar Epps and LL Cool J.
Oh, yeah. I got you.
Hey, man. I think that's probably the best role LL Cool J's ever played in his life.
Ooh.
I'm just saying, for the role of what he's played, I mean, he was to be a... kingpin, gangster.
Yeah.
And he was menacing. If you've ever seen the movie, you'll know I don't look at pool sticks the same.
Yeah.
It's as bad as you can think, Tyler. That look you made, as bad as you can think about a pool stick.
I thought he was underrated in Deep Blue Sea.
Okay.
I did. I thought he was underrated
in
Deep Blue Sea.
It's cool, but what he did in In Too Deep, he was something else,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of a dominating character.
For sure. It was, boy. Called himself God. Real name Dwayne, but he called himself God, baby.
Hey, same difference.
Damn. There's some other, like I ran into something that I remember when I first watched the movie, I never thought of it then, but I ran into something in a very similar fashion that I run into when my in-laws are in town and they are watching that damn show, The Equalizer. Like, it's hard for me to believe that Hill Harper's a gangster.
Yeah, no, you're not.
It's hard for me to believe that Hill Harper is stomping people into trash bags.
He's not.
And that's just like I my in-laws were in town last week, fellas, and they had that damn Equalizer on. And there were 8 people all with machine guns, like pistols, machine guns. Queen Latifah and one other gentleman, they had no weapons.
Yeah.
In there by themselves, sitting ducks.
They in there daredeviling.
They came in and Queen Latifah at 50 plus, they came in there and whooped their ass, took their guns, and killed all of them.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about any of the except for the first
one. That's just not believable.
No.
That's just not believable. I mean, no guns. No gun.
As good of an actor as Queen Latifah is, it's not convincing. Like, Queen Latifah is not taking my gun. No chance. No chance. No chance she's going to be able to move with me.
Not at 57. No.
Hell no. You can't shake Queen?
Nah, yeah.
Get out of here.
It's Queen. Man, you run right past Queen.
Get out of here.
She had her running down Tyreek Hills in this show. Come on, man. 802, no guns.
Man, they got juke the hell out of her.
I know it. Queen ain't touching nobody. Somebody texting, can you name a bigger villain than him with that pool stick scene?
Yeah. No, that's a good one.
Maybe Bishop.
Ooh, Bishop. Yeah, in the elevator?
Yeah. It's a scary
Bishop. Dude. Bishop, I cannot watch that scene. Even though I know what happens, I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, Bishop was...
Yeah, no, Bishop would be one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Old Dog, one of the great villains.
Yep.
Some villains out there. All right. I just simply have this question, and we talked about this a bit. I heard John Lopez, the OG, apparently, like he said, this has stopped being funny anymore and being a passing joke.
Yeah.
The Astros, their injuries, things. It had been done with me.
Yeah.
I have been saying something, like we've reached a point where, you know, something happens. It's just like, hey, man, I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know. We got to make some changes. Like I somebody has to lose a job. Like, and I felt like we had arrived there multiple times on this staff. There's got to be some sort of change with the training staff.
The game is over.
Laughable, but not funny.
It seems like maybe that last night for some may have been the last straw. I don't know how you had more straws left, but may have been the last straw because I had been done.
Thank God Miles Straw's safe somewhere.
Yeah, he's safe because they would have tore apart those legs.
Oh, man. Can you
fastest person in the city of Houston's history, Miles Straw.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take him over Carl Lewis any day. Carl in his prime. Miles Straw. Got him. But this is to me is where is the line for Jim Crane? That's my thing. Is you brought this up a little bit earlier, Brandon? It is, yeah, man. Like you said, I thought embarrassment or laughingstock may be the line. I feel like we have arrived there.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what will be this. Like this, we all recognize that this is a problem, and this is a big problem, and that he has had big money guys or big important guys that have been greatly affected by whatever is going on in that training staff. And I'm just like, what's the line?
I'm not going to pretend to know Jim Crane better than I do, but I have been around him a little bit. And one thing that I do know about Jim Crane is that he is a prideful man. And I'm not saying to a fault. I'm saying like in a reasonable way, a guy that's made that much money and has been as successful as Jim Crane has been throughout his life, I would expect nothing less for him to be a prideful man. But given such, right? Like, given him being the prideful man that I understand him to be, and again, I'm not saying it in a negative way, I would expect somebody with that level of pride to take more pride in this when it comes to this, right? To say enough is enough, to draw that, like you asked that question, what is the line? We don't know as we sit here and throw out the question, but you do expect there to be a line somewhere. And so
they got to stop saying to themselves, well, man,
yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Just keep going it out there, guys.
Enough of the all shucks.
Yes. Like, or just bad luck.
Yeah, you've all shucks me to death. And at this point, like, we need real solutions to real problems. Like, again, I keep going back to, and this is kind of the Lopez's point about it not being funny anymore. It is laughable what is happening with them. It is that bad to where it is comical. But because most of us either care about it or we're speaking to people who care about it, like, it's not a funny thing. It's not a joking or laughing matter, as comical or as laughable as they look and seem. So, like, at what point do you take pride in being the butt of a joke, right? Like, or not wanting to be the butt of a joke, you know? Like, at some point, you got to stick your chest out and make a decision and say, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. It's not going to look like this. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but it is very clear that they haven't even come close to finding it. Frustrating part.
That is. It just keeps getting worse, and they keep doing
that. They need a solution, and they don't have solution makers, finders.
They're not making any changes,
right,
to try to find those, because that could have happened going into the year. They're not making any changes to find those solution makers, and they're just continuing to give it to those same guys who are coming up with those solutions.
Yeah, they got a lot of people on this team that are fixers, right? Yordan Alvarez, when he plays, is a fixer. I think what we've seen from a managerial standpoint with Joe Espada, I think he's a plus in a lot of ways, a fixer. Hunter Brown, his couple of last starts notwithstanding. Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez, fixers, can stabilize your rotation, especially when it's getting finicky. Who is the fixer organizationally? Who is the fixer when it comes to the medical staff, when it comes to overall management of injury and how we roll guys back out there? Like, who is fixing that issue? I don't know if they found that.
Like, I mean, this one was so bad and embarrassing. Like, guys, he could not jog out to his position group. Like, where his position was supposed to be, the center field, to start the warm-ups, he could not make it out there.
Yeah.
It was clear that, maybe he wasn't ready. Whatever work that he had did before, maybe he wasn't ready. And maybe if this was the first time it ever happened and they've never had any real issues, like, you could say, damn, man, you know, maybe they talked to Jake and it just, you know, they were just really unlucky with the communication and it. But no, man.
I screwed it up.
With coming off the Yordan, coming off of everything that has happened.
Kyle Tucker last year.
You gotta get this right. Like, when you saw the injury, Tyler and Brandon, in LA, what'd you think? That's gonna be two and a half games?
No.
Is that what you thought?
I was concerned that they pulled him in the middle of the game, and also, like, just the uncertainty of it, you know, hearing TK and Blum, like, hey, we're gonna figure out what happened to Jake. You know, so, like, I was nervous about it from the very beginning, but when I found out he was going to play yesterday, I did assume that everything was going to be all right. I did.
Do you feel weird for whatever reason, trusted that?
Yeah, I do. I feel played a little bit.
I told myself I'm going to stop doing
it. Yeah, I feel a little played and a little silly.
I can't believe they got me.
Yeah, they did. They did. They got me.
I can't believe.
Oh, he's back. He's back. Great. LFG.
I looked at it and I thought, well, boy, this feels quick. I just, like, man, this feels quick. Like, it feels like you would think, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, they're definitely just going to go ahead and lean on precaution, right?
Yeah.
A texter said it earlier. You got 6 games left after that Dodgers series. You got an off day in between the Dodgers, or in between the Guardians and the Rangers. And then he has the break, right?
Yeah.
Like, you would think, let's get precaution here.
And see, when I think about them fumbling the injury thing, I think more so about them holding the guy out and not necessarily knowing exactly either what it is or communicating it properly with the public, I don't necessarily think of rushing guys back. That's not the mishap that I think of when I think of their issues with injuries.
Do you count Jordan in that? The Russian?
I mean, I got to. I have to. It's just not top
Lance.
Of it, it. That's not the angle of it that's top of mind. But then this happens and you're like, but you know what? Now that you think of it, it's both. It's all of it. It's if he's not playing, do they know what's wrong? If he is playing, are they rushing him back?
Yeah. All right, we'll get you ready. There's some good Astros news. Some good Astros news. And the biggest thing happening.
Oh, it's not about an injury.
Yeah, no, it's not an injury.
Sorry.
No, it's not an injury. But good news for the Astros. We'll get you ready also for what feels like, I don't want to say a big series, but like you don't want to lose this series. You don't want to go in struggling to the break when you've been playing so well against the Rangers. We'll get you set up for that. The rotation is out for that series. Looks good for the Astros. And the biggest thing happening in the sports world tonight and something to keep an eye on that could be a precursor to what we see with your Houston Rockets. That's coming up next.